Coming up on Tech News Today, there's a Google Oracle verdict, but it may confuse the heck out of all of us. Also, Apple laptops may be getting cheaper, and AT&T wants to secure your house. Is that a good idea? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, May 7th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. It just takes a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into high-definition video conferencing. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Our listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use our promo code TNT. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TNT5. And they now offer free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
I'm OMG Chad.
And joining us from halfway around the world... And on the other side of the hemispheres, Mr. Simon Dingle in Pretoria, South
Hello.
Africa today. Welcome.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Thanks for staying up late for us. I'm glad you don't have daylight saving there.
Yep, so am I tonight.
We've got lots of news, so let's get right to it. Starting with a verdict delivered in the Oracle Google trial. We have the definitive answer.
As you probably know by now, this is a patent case. So you may be wondering,
if you're wondering, who is that guy that's talking to me?
Why is this man?
That was what the jury was doing earlier today after they moved on from the copyright side of the case to the patent side of the case.
That's one of the best videos ever.
That is the actual video that they used in place of an expert witness to explain how patents work.
That video, by the way, was produced in 2002. Mm-hmm. Somehow seems a lot older.
It seems very government made, though.
It does.
Yeah. They were watching this because the judge said, okay, we've got your verdict. We've got some questions about the verdict, but we'll get to those next week. Let's move on to the patent side of this thing and get it over with. Here's the verdict. Today, the company broke copyright laws. So they say that Google broke copyright laws when it used Java APIs to design the system and in the question of copying 9 lines of code. So in those two questions, Google was found guilty of infringement. Google was not found guilty of infringing by copying software documentation, which was the third of the four questions, and the jury could not reach a decision on whether Google had a valid fair use defense. And that's the one we talked about last week that we suspected they were hung up on. In fact, that was the one that they were hung up on. Google has asked for a mistrial based on the incomplete verdict, which we expected, and that issue will be briefed later this week. They'll decide whether to do that or not. Now, you may wonder, okay, so Google's found guilty. That's it. You know, APIs are copyrightable, but that's not the way it works. Judge Alsup gave instructions to the jury, and we mentioned this before, to act as if APIs were copyrightable. So what the jury found was that if APIs are copyrightable, Google infringed on them. They don't know if they have a fair use defense or not. So Google could still get out of it that way. Judge Alsup could also rule that APIs are not, in fact, protectable by copyright, and that would sort of get rid of that,
negate that
question.
Verdict.
Yeah. They would still be guilty of the 9 lines of code, but the damages in that are going to be pretty minimal when you're talking about 9 lines out of 15 million lines.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. With infringement, like so many things are technically infringement, but fair use is always not always. It's a good way to get out of those things. Like, I mean, if I start singing a song, I'm infringing on certain copyrights, but that like there's not a chance that I'm going to get sued for it unless I put it on the web and do all kinds of crazy things, I guess. But I mean, infringement happens so often that the jury could find that only 9 lines is infringement.
But we won't find out about the mistrial until later this week. We won't find out about Alsup's ruling on the copyright until possibly next week. So this is far from over. However, it's got everybody talking. If, in fact, APIs are copyrightable, a lot of people are going to be very upset. Tyler Ochoa, a professor of copyright law at Santa Clara University, told Ars Technica, other people may be deterred, actually he says will be deterred from using Java as the basis for some non-standard thing in the future. It could be the case that Oracle wins the battle and loses the war, implying that if APIs are determined copyrightable, people might just stop using Java for stuff altogether instead of licensing it.
Yeah, that seems like that'd be the opposite of what Oracle wants in the first place. They want their technology out there, and the original concept was Oracle was going to have a smartphone using Java. I guess they'd have to get back in that game if nobody else uses it.
Also, George Reese, chief technology officer with cloud management services firm Entrouse, told Wired, if APIs can be copyright protected, that would be incredibly destructive to the cloud. With respect to the cloud in particular, it would put any company that has implemented the Amazon APIs at risk unless they have some kind of agreement with Amazon on those APIs. So everybody's going to have to go redo all of their licensing.
Oh, God, what a mess.
The cloud is on hold temporarily while we negotiate a workaround. Your cloud is very important.
Simon, what do you make of all of this?
I'm trying to understand it all, Tom. I mean, we've got people who were informed by a video that was cut in 2002 using outtakes from Mortlock deciding on something that could break the entire internet. Well, parts of it. I don't get it. And I'm wondering what would have happened if Sun had stayed around and wasn't acquired by Oracle, and Jason Schwartz was the man who got to make decisions about how they legally pursued these things, which is, I guess, what Google was thinking when they started doing covers of Java, right?
Yeah, and what we found from Schwartz when he was on the witness stand was they weren't terribly happy with what Google was doing, but they weren't going to oppose it, and they didn't think they needed a license. I think things would be quite a bit different if Oracle hadn't bought Sun. But Oracle did buy Sun. This is what Oracle's going to do. And if Oracle wins, it'll be interesting to see what they do as far as their licensing terms for Java on the mobile platform going forward. Mm. Another CEO is in hot water, and that's Mr. Scott Thompson.
Yes,
of Yahoo.
We talked last week. I think it was Friday, actually. How Scott Thompson was outed by Dan Loeb of Third Point as someone who doesn't actually have a computer science degree, but claimed to have one on a variety of bios. His time at eBay, his current time at Yahoo, to name a couple.
It was on websites, and he didn't.
Correct. But it was also
it was also
in SEC filing papers.
It was not in the SEC filing papers.
For Yahoo, it was.
It was for Yahoo.
Yes.
Oh.
Not for eBay.
Not for eBay. Okay, that's
it,
what I
it made it into Yahoo SEC filing papers, which takes it
that
a notch
makes
above.
It a little harder. Yeah.
Now, the reason that Dan Loeb matters in this case is he's a Yahoo shareholder who owns about 6% of the company. So he's a very big shareholder. He's also interested in having a seat on the board. Up until now, Yahoo is tried to keep him at arm's length without a seat, and he's kind of going for the jugular at this point. As of Friday, Dan Loeb and his company Third Point had promised that they would issue a demand for closer inspection of how the vetting process when Scott Thompson was being elected to the role of CEO went about, because it didn't sound like they did a good enough job of figuring out what was real on his bio and what was not. As promised, today they issued a demand via a statement, quote, under section 220B of the Delaware General Corporation Law to inspect books and records relating to the hiring of CEO Scott Thompson, the appointment of Patty Hart to the Yahoo board, and the selection of various board members, and then he names a few. Third Point believes that Yahoo shareholders and employees will be best served if the board accepts responsibility quickly for this latest debacle. We believe that this internal investigation by this board must not be conducted behind a veil of secrecy, and shareholders deserve total transparency. So basically, Loeb and company gave Yahoo until noon Eastern time today to come out with some sort of a statement, some sort of a, here's what we're going to do, here's information that we have transferred over to you.
They didn't do it.
They didn't do it. So now we've gotten into a bit of a legal situation. Now, sources are telling All Things D, who have been following the story very closely, the Yahoo will focus on a board investigation. They'll be using an outside law firm, which will be headed by independent director Fred Amoroso, who coincidentally is one of the board members that Third Point wants rechecked as far as that vetting process. So,
they're not going to be happy with that.
They're not going to be happy with this. It's sort of one more step into what's really going to happen here. Now, Scott Thompson hasn't said anything publicly. He probably isn't allowed to, even if he wanted to. But sources say that he has been keeping his top staff in the loop on what's going on. Sources say he says, I'm limited to what I can say, but he does blame a personal vendetta against him by one Dan Loeb.
It was Dan Loeb who put the resume information up.
That's correct.
On Yahoo and in the SEC.
This came from Dan Loeb initially, even though it ended up that his claims were true.
So Dan Loeb created Scott Thompson's resume.
Well, no. Loeb brought to light inconsistencies.
I don't think it's Dan's fault that the inconsistencies exist.
No.
Yeah.
Well, no. But he's saying that the reason he's in hot water is this vendetta. Because Dan Loeb just could have not said anything.
I guess what I'm saying is Scott Thompson's in hot water because he had an inaccuracy on his resume.
I know,
and even if Dan Loeb hadn't even discovered it, maybe somebody else would
have.
Sure,
he didn't have to show that off or even point attention to it at all. But Loeb's been, he's been a thorn in Yahoo's side for a while. I think it was... Was it back in January when he wanted to have a different set of people on the board? He wanted people like Jeff Zucker in. And basically, Yahoo said, yeah, thanks for your suggestion, 6%er. We don't really care. We're going to go with who we want. And
he also wants to be on the board.
Yeah, so there's
very
badly. He's got a lot of interest in this idea of like, okay, if I can get all these people off, I can get in, and I can appoint media people like I wanted. Because he wanted, like I was saying, Jeff Zucker, because the concept was Yahoo would become a media company once it would sell off all its Alibaba stake stuff, and they would be focused on something. So he might just have beef with the guy, and he's just finding all this great stuff on Thompson. He's like, I can't believe you left that up there. So now I'm going to point it out. So, I mean, this is as much Thompson's fault as possible. But, like, I mean, Loeb didn't have to put this out there.
Well, that's true. But he did. And there's probably no love lost between the two gentlemen. Other people are getting into they're throwing their opinions in the ring, let's just say. Investor, Berkshire Hathaway CEO Warren Buffett. Heard of him? Yeah, he does pretty well. He says in an interview to CNBC this morning, it doesn't sound like an inadvertent error. That, of course, was the term that Yahoo originally used when it was discovered that Scott Thompson did not have the degree that he was said to have had. Warren goes on to say, if I thought that an officer had consistently misstated some fact to me, I think I'd probably do something about it. He goes on to say, if you can't trust the people you're working with, you've got a problem. Demand Media CEO Richard Rosenblatt responded to Kara Swisher, who's been following this Yahoo case on All Things D via Twitter, said, if I was him, I would grudgingly resign for the good of the thousands of Yahoo employees who just can't handle any more drama. These are the folks who are really hurting, right?
I just love the fact that his defense is somebody pointed it out. It's like, you know, who made the resume, and now it's like poo because somebody pointed it out. I think Yahoo's just a circus at the moment, complete with clowns running it. I think they should just rename the place Flickr, stop dicking around with all these other things. Into now's kind of cute. They can keep that going. But I don't see like a future for Yahoo. I don't get where any of this is going.
Do you have a computer science degree?
Crazy.
Because I think you might make a good CEO of Yahoo. That actually sounds like a halfway decent plan. Focus the company on the things they do well.
I'm up for the job.
Yeah.
You should see my resume, man.
It inadvertently says that. But anyway, we'll keep. I think circus is probably the right word for it, no matter what you think of this, and we'll keep an eye on it. Meanwhile, something that's always a circus is the rumor mill.
Yeah, the rumor mill. Here we go. It looks like soon enough you'll be able to have an $800 MacBook Air that you could order your Apple TV with, and then you can hook up your Xbox 720 to it. That's what you could do soon. Apparently.
Wow.
A quarter three, maybe.
This is all rumor, though.
This is all rumor. Here we go. DigiTimes is saying Apple's considering considering coming out with a new MacBook Air at $800 or $799 in the third quarter of this year. It could be against the whole Ultrabook movement of dropping the price.
Where did DigiTimes get this information?
From upstream supply chain.
From Salmon.
Yes, exactly. Wow. Salmon can talk over there. And then the Apple TV. Let's talk about this, because over at Cult of Mac, a source tells them somebody has seen the Apple HDTV prototype, and it looks like a really large cinema display, which it would come with Siri and have an eyesight for free FaceTime calls. Cult of Mac says that their source is well-placed and has provided us with great tips in the past. However, not all of them have panned out. So they're covering their bases.
That's an interesting way of saying sometimes we get good tips from them and sometimes we don't.
Yeah, so the idea that it looks like a cinema display, not that surprising since they have those.
Well, that's all we have to go on, so how convenient.
That's maybe it's just a really big cinema display. Who knows? And then there's the Xbox 720. A source is telling IGN that Microsoft is currently manufacturing the next-gen Xbox in Austin, Texas at Flextronics. So this is quite a detailed rumor. Prior to researching the manufacturing stage, Flextronics created a new testing group separate from the rest of the company. The team was making this product. And then, let's see, Pride and Manifest, there's the team. And then the most likely scenario, what's actually happening is that these are the dev kits. So, you know, the gamers, not the gamers, the developers want to make games and they need something to work on.
Yeah, if they're manufacturing something this early, because Microsoft has said, we will not announce a new Xbox this year, then it would have to be some kind of prototype dev kit that they want to give to EA and other folks to be like, all right, see how this works for you. Start working on some games.
But Forbes also has a source that tells them that next-gen Xbox games are already being developed. So maybe it's just for a lot more than just EA. It's for like the little companies out there, too.
Well, they may be working on developing games and don't have a full prototype yet. They're just given specs, and they're making the games to those specs, and now they'll actually get a box that they can test on. I mean, it's really early in the process. Simon, what's your favorite three?
I'm going to go with Xbox for most interesting. I think the MacBook Air rumor just makes sense. The Apple TV gets my new favorite mock-up prize because they really put a lot of work into that one.
But, yeah, good job, Cult of Mac, on the mock-up.
Yeah. But the Xbox, I'm just wondering, so when do we see this thing then? 2014, 2015?
I think we see it at E3 2013, and it's available for the holidays by the end of that year.
Right, so available Christmas 2013.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
The MacBook Air story, as much as I know people would love to have a MacBook Air for $800 when I think they're going for more like $1,000 now, and Erica Ogg over at GigaOM had a couple good points on this, is like, first of all, it's not as if Ultrabooks are such a runaway hit that I think Apple feels all that threatened.
Right.
Another thing is that MacBook Airs sell very well currently. So $200 price drop sounds great in theory, but what's really the Apple incentive here? Well, I don't think it's because they're afraid of Ultrabooks.
I think it could be that if Intel, they're trying to get that Ultrabook off the ground, so if they can actually sell the chips at a discount, because that's what they want to do. Well, that's what the retailers wanted, but Intel wasn't budging right away. If they are willing to cut the price on the processor, Apple could go ahead and say, yeah, look, the chips are cheaper. We're going to cut the price, and we're going to look great doing this because we order so much of it. They could probably get a better discount than someone like ASUS or someone like HP maybe. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. They could probably pass that on, so to speak. I don't know. It's not exactly in Apple's like history for them to go, yeah, we'll make a budget product. $799, they could really, really take over part of the market with that.
I would possibly buy a MacBook Air and not replace my MacBook Pro at $799, and I don't know that at $999 I'm going to do that. I'm looking at it as a replacement. Like, can I live without the MacBook Pro and just do the Air? Whereas $799, that's starting to get into the range of an iPad, and I start to look at, well, maybe instead of an iPad, I'll do a MacBook Air next time.
I'm saying not Apple's history. This is Tim Cook now. We could probably do something like this, and it could be a lower spec device too. It doesn't have to be the latest and greatest either.
Well, if you're going with Ivy Bridge, I get my processors confused. It is Ivy Bridge, right?
Yeah, it's the latest one.
If you're going with Ivy Bridge on the MacBook Air, you're starting to talk about really, really sort of competent processing power, something that could rival the Pros. Obviously, no optical drive, but who needs that anyway? So I'm with Tom. If they come out at $800 with a solid Air, something on the processor front that makes it more appealing and maybe more storage, I'm in.
Yeah, I've already been thinking of doing that with some of the Ultrabooks that are coming out. So that would enter my decision making. Like, oh, maybe not the Envy, maybe MacBook Air. I'd have to think about that. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, GoToMeeting by Citrix. We develop trust in the people we know, but it's really hard to get to know someone if you can't see them. You can get a little bit out of their voice, but it's not the same as looking them in the eye. And that can be a tough hurdle in business when you've got your employees and your clients strung out all over the world and you want to have meetings and build that trust and confidence in them. That's why we recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces, a simple online meeting service with group HD video that helps you get better connected to the people you depend on for success. We were using it just the other day to meet with Citrix. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, all you need is a webcam. You click, and you're instantly collaborating with your team, with your clients in real time from anywhere in the world, even on the go from an iPad. And it helps build that trust and confidence. It makes meetings more effective. I'll be honest. It's not that I didn't trust Citrix. I totally trust Citrix. But now I feel like I know the people, that I've got a chance to look at them and see them talking and see their nonverbal cues and build that trust and confidence because we used GoToMeeting with HD Faces. So go check it out. Start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting. Our listeners can try it free for 30 days. Don't wait for the special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TNT. Be sure to use that promo code TNT. And we thank GoToMeeting and Citrix for their support of Tech News Today. Now we're going to go mobile. Bunch of stuff coming out of CTIA in New Orleans, and HTC leading the way with announcements today, announcing a 4G LTE updated Droid Incredible. This is one of the HTC One series of hero phones, as they called them a while ago. Looks very similar to the HTC One S that's offered by T-Mobile here in the U.S. The Droid Incredible with LTE will have an 8-megapixel camera, obviously LTE, Beats audio, because it's an HTC, Ice Cream Sandwich, Sense UI 4, a 4-inch Super LCD QHD dual-core Snapdragon S4 processor, 1,700 milliamp hours of battery life, micro SD card, and available in the coming weeks. Yeah, anyone
excited? That's the reaction I had.
See, we need Jason here because he would be all over this.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's. I mean, this after the Galaxy S3, it seems like this. Oh, this is nice. HTC One is product. Their One product's coming everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And at least that they're sticking to their guns and going, look, this is our hero strategy. We'll have the One, and it's available on all the carriers. So that's smart for them. The question is whether people are going to buy this phone or not. I mean, it's got some good specs. LTE is definitely a nice thing. I noticed the battery size is a little small, 1,700 milliamp hour, compared to like the Galaxy S3 has like, I think, a 2,100. Obviously, that has a larger screen. But, I mean, there's so many options out there right now. I guess the plus side of this is that's the second Ice Cream Sandwich phone for Verizon, I think. I'm not sure if that one's right, but it's something like that.
It's definitely superior to the HTC One S.
Yeah, that's true.
Spec-wise. And then there's also the One V was announced. It's going to show up on a variety of U.S. partners this summer. PhoneScoop speculates Metro PCS, Virgin Mobile, and U.S. Cellular.
Makes sense.
3.7-inch display, 800x400, Ice Cream Sandwich, 1 gigahertz single-core Snapdragon S3 processor. So all the four major U.S. carriers have a One phone now. AT&T has the One X LTE, Sprint has the Evo 4G LTE, T-Mobile has the One S, and Verizon has the Droid Incredible. Are you guys getting the HTC One in South Africa, Simon?
Yeah, and I have to say, I think HTC is doing the best job of Android at the moment. They really have sorted out the interface. Next to vanilla Android, I still think the Nexus is my pick for Android devices at the moment. But if I had to go with not vanilla Android, it would probably be the HTC One X. I really like what they've done with the interface. The screen's fantastic. The battery life really is its Achilles heel. But aside from that, it's looking pretty good. They get my vote.
It seems like there's always a new king in Android land, though. There's not one that's really blowing away. I mean, we talked about the Samsung Galaxy S3 last week. Of course, it's not quite out yet, but that's an impressive looking for phone. The Droid Razr Max was getting a lot of love, you know, not more than a couple months ago. You don't hear people talking about it as much. It's a fickle world in Android land.
Mm. And nobody's talking about the Galaxy Nexus anymore.
Sony's coming up as well.
HTC is also a long way away from having that unified line. That was the whole One line. It was supposed to be, you know, there's the high end, there's the middle, and then
there's the One phone with its four names.
Right. And you got the One V at the low end. But then it's like, as you mentioned, yeah, U.S. carriers all have a One phone, but then you've got the One XLTE that AT&T has, and Sprint's got the Evo 4G, and Verizon's got the Droid Incredible. And so it's like, it's still very confusing to me. This is not a streamlined product line that HTC has.
Well, that's the best word to describe Android is confusing, right? Consumers don't know what to make of it. The fragmentation's a problem for the ecosystem, but from the consumer perspective, it's just way too confusing to choose a phone right now.
You think you're confused now. Wait till we should read you some of these numbers. These are several different surveys out today. Let's see if any of them catch anybody's eye. Nielsen did a 3-month survey, found that smartphones now in use by 50.4% of consumers in the United States, Android continuing to dominate the space, 48.5% of all smartphone handsets, Apple second at 32%. Surprised? No? No surprise. Women are edging out men when it comes to smartphone usage in the United States. 50.9% of females had smartphones, while among men it was only 50.1%. So it's not that far. And unsurprisingly, younger users are the most smartphone savvy. 2 out of 3 25 to 34-year-olds use the more advanced mobile handsets defined as smartphones in this survey.
The ethnicity charts.
Asian Americans, most likely over 60%.
And whites
have
released
smartphones.
And the
two have smartphones. Mm-hmm.
ComScore Mobile Metrics has been revamped. They examine mobile media usage. This one's a little more interesting. Google Sites led as the top property across iOS, Android, and RIM devices, reaching 96.9% of the U.S. mobile audience. That's monopoly, folks. Followed by Facebook, Yahoo, and Amazon in usage. However, websites aren't what people are doing on their smartphones. 4 out of every 5 mobile media minute is spent in apps. It's different across the different devices, but whatever your local app store, whether it's Google Play or iOS apps or BlackBerry App World, is usually number one. And then, depending on the platform, search, Facebook, and Maps are the more popular up there. If you're on Android, Gmail rises up there above Facebook.
Well, Maps is almost, that's a tough one, because it's like, even if I search for something in iOS, for example, I search for an address via Safari, it'll kick me over to Maps. So it's not as if I really chose to use that app. I think that's an app that people are using maybe not so much because they want to, it's just because that's how the OS works.
Well, but they are looking for a map.
Yes.
They're looking for a location, so
right.
They're definitely looking for that type of information. Simon, what does this jive with the way you use your phone?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm trying to think of the apps I use most. I guess Twitter actually is my most used app. I don't know how I feel about that, but that would be it. I'm just pulling up my phone. But yeah, it gels with what I do on my phone, I guess. I use Maps a whole lot.
Yeah, I'd say Maps is probably, for the reason Sarah was just talking about, because I want to know where someone is.
And yeah, it's the
first thing that comes up.
There you are.
It's the default. Facebook users engaged for over 7 hours a month via the browser or app. Twitter had nearly 2 hours during the month, and Pinterest 1 hour during the month.
So in the social network where you can write a lot and put a whole lot of stuff, people are there longest. The thing that's got the 140 characters, like a little less time. And when you're just looking at pictures, it's like an hour.
I never use Facebook on my mobile app. I just find it frustrating.
I still have it on
there. It's a terrible application.
Yeah.
You choose to hit it via your browser?
I just ignore it on mobile. Don't use it.
Well, that's what Facebook did.
Yeah. Well, Tom, that's...
Stop that.
Get with the times, man.
I know, seriously.
Look what everyone else is doing. They're all cool. Right.
And then, I don't know, Pew Internet and American Life Project, I usually love their studies, but they put one out saying 70% of all cell phone owners in the U.S. and 86% of smartphone owners use their phones for information. They call it just-in-time uses. Coordinating meetings, solving problems, deciding what restaurant to eat at.
What are the other people doing?
Yeah, it just seemed like,
are they just calling people on their phones?
What I guess.
But then you can use that. I mean, I was looking at that study. I was kind of laughing at it. I was like, well, yeah, you could use a phone before to do these things, too. You'd be like, hey, do you want to have a meeting today? It's like, yeah.
We're less likely to do it if you had to pick up the phone and call, I guess.
Well, I guess if you pick it up and look at it.
Send a couple quick text messages.
I guess so.
You know, there are apps for deciding where you want to eat. They're very helpful.
That's true. Finally, AT&T had an announcement at CTIA, but it wasn't about phones. They are joining the home automation and security world with a product called Digital Life. If you've seen signs for ADT in a lawn, they're the leader in this space with 25% of the market. 23% of homes in the U.S. have a security system. And AT&T's Digital Life solution is going to begin trials this summer in Dallas and Atlanta. So you can be more secure from AT&T in Dallas and Atlanta this summer. AT&T bought a company called Xanboo, X-A-N-B-O-O, in late 2010. It has a central control panel that can connect wirelessly with cameras, thermostats, appliance controls, lights, sensors, smoke and carbon monoxide detectors, windows, pretty much anything you think. And AT&T says there's almost an unlimited capacity to add devices to your home. So it's not just about security. It's also about, you know, opening doors. There's some stuff going on in AT&T labs where it would actually register who's approaching through bioacoustical transmission, which is the detection of vibrations in the bones. And be able to tell if it's you and unlock the door for you. And if it's not you, announce that a guest is arriving.
Wow.
Like a little butler.
Cool.
But that's not the service that's coming out yet.
I'm sorry. The last people I want having keys to my house are a mobile operator.
You don't want to entrust the security of your home to AT&T or some other mobile service provider?
You know, it may come as a surprise, Tom, but no, I wouldn't.
Then you got that evil twin thing again. They might have the same bone structure, but they're psycho.
Well, then you'd have to set it differently.
And now
right?
The door is open.
You don't think there's an evil twin button on your app for this? I think they must have to include that. But I didn't know that Verizon also does this as well. They actually services their customers on their landline basis. But AT&T is doing something different. They're going to be nationwide. So even if you can't get AT&T landline service, which I don't know if that even exists anymore. But
it does. What is different about AT&T also is they are agnostic. For once, mm-hmm. saying, we don't care if you have AT&T internet or even AT&T mobile service. we'll still provide you this home automation and security service with whatever internet connection you have. Doesn't matter.
And then we'll let ourselves in and change it.
They showed some pretty interesting demos. I mean, one of the things was an alarm that attaches to your window. And when the window is opened, like, your lights will go on and the alarm will blare. And, like, they could tie in things that you wouldn't normally do, I would think. And the other thing is Verizon shows a lot of limited selections. They have their own, like, this is what you can do. But AT&T is claiming that they can do pretty much anything. It's the thing that with using Z-Wave, which is quite popular in home automation anyway. So you could have a lot of different things working together, and you don't have to be so tech savvy to do it. I don't know, like Simon was saying, I'm not sure if you want to trust AT&T with that, but it's. Can you imagine if there's some weird system glitch? It's like, oh, all doors unlocked. It's like, that could be a problem.
Well, I think what's actually most comforting about this, if you were considering it, is it is a separate company owned by AT&T, and the fact that they aren't tying it in to their mobile service or to UVerse or to DSL or the landline or anything, to me says, well, we're actually trying to get into a separate area of business. I also think it's interesting that AT&T, who was not allowed to buy T-Mobile and is now not very successful in competing against cable companies in video, has found another lucrative market to go into. Maybe it'll keep them from trying to be a monopoly on all things over the internet. I don't know.
Well, maybe they could spend some more money on their network, too.
So what are the prices like on this technology? Because the stuff's been around for a while, and I like it in principle, but it's always been really expensive.
Yeah, no price information was announced today, so we'll have to wait and see when the tests roll out this summer to find out. That's a really good question. Mm. Let's move on to the news fuse. If you're jealous of those Google Plus users that get to broadcast their Hangouts to everyone, well, you now can be one of them. Hangouts On Air function has officially launched for everyone. Feature was introduced last year, but was available only on a limited basis. When you start a Hangout On Air, you'll be able to see how many viewers you have, and an archived copy of your Hangout will be available immediately on your YouTube channel.
A security hole in OX10 Lion, first spotted back in February, finally got some attention. Cryptome published a post explaining how file vault encryption passwords are stored in plain text and readable by anybody with root or admin access. Ars Technica reports that only workarounds are running periodic scripts to purge the debug lines, which store the plain text passwords. Local File Vault users use File Vault 2, which encrypts the entire boot volume instead of just individual home directories, thus preventing external attacks.
It's official. Microsoft is offering the Xbox 360 for $99 with a 2-year contract that requires you to pay $15 a month for Xbox Live. With that contract is an early termination fee that starts at $250 and will diminish each month. The whole thing is a pilot program and is available only at the 16 Microsoft stores in the United States.
Facebook kicked off its IPO roadshow in New York Monday, attracting hundreds of investors who lined up around the block as if it was Diablo 3 release day. CEO Mark Zuckerberg, who was dressed in jeans and a sweatshirt, likely a hooded sweatshirt, arrived in a black SUV shortly before 1 p.m. in Midtown Manhattan and proceeded to tout Silicon Valley's record $10 billion IPO. It doesn't sound like any of that stuff from last week deadened anybody's enthusiasm.
No. According to a Consumer Reports survey, one out of every four Facebook users put fake information in their profiles due to fear of identity theft. 20% of Facebook users, in fact, share their posts publicly, and 13% never change their privacy settings.
That's a betrayal.
Shocked, appalled.
Remember the embarrassment. App? Does anybody remember the app Color? Anybody?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, you do. Okay. Well,
oh, of course.
Well, the second version allows you to share silent videos on Facebook, kind of a 1920s cinema meets the future kind of thing. Well, now Verizon is bridging the gap. A new version of the Color app will come pre-installed on some Verizon phones and let you record higher quality videos. And if you're on the Verizon LTE network, they can be talkies. You can actually have audio in there. If you're not on Verizon, you can see and hear other users' recordings, but you can't put sound in your own videos.
So. They should pivot to dancing videos next.
If you're not on Verizon, you're a mime.
Well, but the videos themselves dance or the videos
just
of dancing?
You're dancing on the video that you upload to Facebook, but it's silent.
Automatic.
Or there's music.
Bloomberg reports Apple offered compensation to ProView to settle their dispute over ownership of the iPad trademark in China. But it's not over yet. Roger Zhe, a lawyer for ProView, told Bloomberg there is still a big gap between the two sides on the settlement amount. Two companies are going through court-supervised mediation to try to resolve the dispute.
ProView says, More money, please. LG announced that it will sell TVs with Google TV included in the U.S. starting the third week of May. Expansion to other parts of the world will depend on the success of this U.S. launch. Way back in December 2011, Eric Schmidt said that the majority of TVs would offer Google TV by the end of the summer. We all remember that. So it looks like they are getting there.
The slow march to all Google TVs. There's an official update to the GNU Image Manipulation Program, otherwise known as GIMP. Version 2.8 is the first stable update since 2008 and brings a single window mode, but that's not the default mode. It's an option. GIMP 2.8 also brings nested layer group support. Right now, you can download the source code at GIMP's site, but you're going to have to build it yourself.
A little DIY. Never hurt anybody, I guess. Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Researchers at UC Davis have cooked up a solution to getting in the sandbox but not getting dirty. It is the Sandy Station project, which uses a Kinect sensor in conjunction with a digital projector and a bit of software to overlay topographical data and simulated water over a real sandbox. So the sand's still there.
This is actual sand.
Yeah. But the water, you're not using any water, so you're not getting it all sticky and stuck to you.
But you're seeing how the water would behave flow. If it was there. So this would be really good for, if you're building a state park or adding a moat.
Or if you're an evil genius.
Or if you're an evil genius and you want to flood the neighboring village.
Yeah, so all you need to do is get a giant hand when you're an evil genius and a giant little shovel.
Yeah, you just prototype it here, right. And then you get the giant shovel later. The team actually hopes the project will help them develop hands-on exhibits for science museums that would teach visitors about contour lines, watersheds, catchment areas,
all
kinds of stuff like that. But I guess it could be used for prototyping. What do you think, Simon?
How did this happen before hoverboards? It's crazy.
Somebody wasn't watching their Back to the Future. This is pretty cool.
We'll need this really first.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Everyone on the audio podcast is like, great, send me the link. Give me that. I'll look at it later. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or a blog. Easy-to-use UI for creating and managing a website or blog. I did it today, actually. I was updating some stuff on SwordandLaser.com, which we use Squarespace for. It's so easy to just pop in, make a couple changes. You know exactly how they're going to look. You can bold things. You can highlight things. You can get underneath and edit the CSS, edit the HTML, or not. They've actually, for HTML hackers like me, they've actually made it much easier if you're in the WYSIWYG, the what you see is what you get view. You can now just hit a button, see the HTML, make a couple quick fix, hit it again, you see the effect take place like that. And they've simplified their subscription plans to provide reduced pricing. Now you can get standard plans as low as $8 a month. So you got to check this out. All-inclusive service. You get the reliability of someone else hosting that site, making sure your site is up, can handle the traffic. And because they're monitoring that traffic, you can look at and analyze that traffic, see what parts of your site people are using, what parts are not, and do all kinds of shared collaborative updating. Don't take our word for it, though. Go build and host your own website right now for absolutely free. No credit card required. Go to squarespace.com. Make a site. Doesn't even matter what it is. You just want to mock me and Iaz and Sarah. Just make a site. Put it up. Send
us
the URL.
Mock us.
Do it for free. Sign up now. No credit card needed. And if you do decide to purchase, use offer code TNT5 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Don't forget about that free domain registration, too, that's coming with your annual plan. If you pay for a whole year at once, you get a free domain name. Then it could be some crazy fun name. So that's squarespace.com. Use that offer code TNT5. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Would you look at that? It's the calendar.
It is a big one. It is a busy week. Okay, Adobe CS6 is shipping. Adobe also says Creative Cloud is still expected to be available May 11th. Apple iOS 5.1.1 has been released with iPad, iPhone bug fixes. Five fixes, actually. So an issue that prevented the new iPad from switching between 2G and 3G networks, fixed. Also improves the reliability of using the camera's HDR option from the lock screen shortcut, fixed. Better syncing Safari bookmarks and reading lists, fixes bugs affecting AirPlay video playback, and fixes a glitch where the unable to purchase alert would show up after successful purchases, which is always very annoying when you've given someone your money. So you can download it on iTunes, Apple.com, or over the air if your iDevice supports that. The 4G LTE Windows Phone Samsung Focus 2 is coming to AT&T May 20th for $50. Apple has extended its 20-gigabyte iCloud storage bonus for Mobile Me users to September 30th. Previously, it was at the end of June. So you got a few more months there. Microsoft has also pushed something back, the Windows Mobile Marketplace shutdown. It's now May 17th. It was previously May 9th. So
I was really worried about that, you know.
They decided to give you another 8 days, Iaz.
I can't wait.
Well, I remember I didn't mention it earlier. 5.1% of people in the U.S. still use Windows Mobile.
Was it 5.1?
The 1.4% of that, I think, was Windows Phone.
Was it 5.1.1%? That would be awesome.
That'd be awesome, yeah.
Just kind of tie everything together in a really weird way. The Sprint HTC Evo 4G LTE, that's my favorite phone ever. I mean, how do you even say that? Is available for pre-order today, $200 on contract. Although the retailer Wirefly has it for $50 less than that. Wirefly, strangely, also had a May 18th date on their website this morning. That has since been taken down, but not before somebody took a screen capture of it. The Kodak Gallery is set to go offline July 2nd after a federal judge approves its sale to Shutterfly. And finally, happy third anniversary of having a Facebook page, Boo the Dog.
Seriously?
You're so cute.
This is Boo the Dog again.
It's his third anniversary.
Well, congratulations, Boo.
Congratulations,
that's
Boo.
That's not a dog. That's,
you're an internet superstar. Look at that cute
like an overgrown mouse.
You know about Boo the Dog, Simon?
Yeah, 4.2 million subscribers.
That's right.
Did I see that flash pot? That's crazy.
Yeah. I'm not as...
None of you have any humor in your blood.
No, not at all.
I hate fun. Yeah.
I have a brick that says I hate fun. That's so.
Let's check what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Now, something that I do think is fun, lasers. And our caller has something to say about it.
Hey, TMT show. I was calling to comment on your recent show 493, where Iaz and Tom were talking about the laser network connection, which made me laugh. Back in a company I still work for, in 97, we had one of these that connected one building to another, and it worked great, except for we lived in Michigan, so in the wintertime, they would get icicles, and we'd get emails saying, the laser's down. Which we all laughed at, but the poor tech guy had to go up to the roof and actually knock the icicles off the laser. So I just want to let you know it does work. We don't use it anymore, obviously, but it was a blast from the past, made me laugh, and maybe, you know, the retro days, it will bring it back. Love the show. Thanks. Keep up the good work.
Obviously, the new advance we were talking about is faster networking than he probably had back then, but you'd think the lasers would melt the icicles.
Once again, mix into the show.
Oh, look at that.
Laser talk.
Laser.
Welcome. Ah. To lasers.
Welcome, everyone, to Monday.
I'm sure Boo will make its way back into the show.
Boo with laser strapped to his back.
What?
Hey, internet explosion.
Make it happen.
Then we'll report it.
We also got a couple emails from folks trying to explain the Windows 8 bundle. Andrew says, if you're on Windows 8 Pro and you open the new Add Features to Windows 8, you'll have one choice, Media Center Pack. If you're on Windows 8 and you open Add Features to Windows 8, you'll have two choices, Windows 8 Pro and Windows 8 Pro with Media Center Pack. The reason they're trying to give you two choices when you upgrade from Windows 8 is so that instead of having to first upgrade to Windows 8 Pro, restart, and then upgrade to Windows 8 Media Center Pack, they're letting you do it all in one step. So that makes sense.
That's his theory.
Fits the facts, yeah.
Andrew, you should get to Microsoft and rewrite that blog post, please.
No, if you look at the chart, that's exactly what he says is exactly the way that chart reads. So I think he's right.
Next email from Jason Rosenfeld of Scenic Labs, LLC. Hi, TNT crew. I run a Blu-ray company out in New Jersey, and lately we've seen a lot of interest in our products through torrent sites. About 20,000 visitors to our site yesterday came from sites like Torrent Damage and pretty much the entire gamut of download and P2P services. We just live with it. We know we can't stop it, but we do think that we can influence behavior from one of freeloading to something that's a bit more mutually beneficial. So we posted a note, and we think it's a pretty good etiquette suggestion. In sum, if you like what you take, consider paying it forward. Write a review where paying customers might see it. People perhaps write a review or post to Twitter or Facebook. There's no shortage of real things that pirates can do to help an independent label. Then he also links us to a blog post that explains a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so BlueScenes.com makes Blu-rays of like background stuff, like aquariums and fireplaces.
Yeah.
And they're pretty nice looking things. And they provide you a free download when you buy the actual Blu-ray disc. And so I guess what was happening, he doesn't make this clear.
They were making their way to torrents?
They were finding their way from these torrent sites to the direct links to the free, because they're undRM'd.
I see.
Videos. Yeah. And downloading them without purchasing, because they're on a server somewhere.
Right.
And so he's like, you know what, I don't want to have to crack down on these people. I don't want to, it's the wrong thing because, you know, one copy is infinite copies, but it's still bugging him. So he's trying, Jason's trying to, you know, strike a balance here of saying, hey, you know, if you are going to take these things, I really don't think I'm losing a huge amount of sales, but maybe try to help me out. Try to let folks know that you liked it, and then maybe people will want to buy them. Simon, you think that's a good take, or is it just like, well, nobody's going to listen?
That's one of the best responses I've ever heard. I guess it's easier to say when you're shooting fish tanks and putting that out on Blu-ray as opposed to like $100 million production. But I like the response.
Well, we don't know how much those fish cost in that tank. This could be $100 million production.
The fish may have royalties and a cut of the merchandising.
That's true. It could have the 5%. You know, I've seen a lot of these deals.
It's, yeah. All right. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That's the place to suggest stories for us to cover on the show. Go in there and submit stories and vote them up or down. And of course, you can also find lots of great guests on every show like Simon Dingle. Thanks for joining us, Simon. Let folks know where they can find your work online and what you're up to these days.
Thanks, guys. At Simon Dingle. I'm actually, I've gotten involved in a startup called 22/7 in South Africa. So doing some interesting stuff at 22/7.com. And then all of my stuff's at my website, simondingle.com. So
excellent.
That's where I am.
All right. Check it out. Thanks again, man, for staying up late for us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. Cheers.
Cheers. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv. You can give us a call and leave us a voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us live on Twit Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Tomorrow, who do we have?
Peter Wells.
Peter Wells. Hey, we're going to stay down in the Southern Hemisphere with Peter Wells. We'll see you then.